Are we into John Wick Chapter 4? Stay tuned for a special sneak peek of our Patreon exclusive show, What We're Into. If you want to keep up with the show and check out our continuing coverage of stuff like Ted Lasso Season 3 and the final season of The Flash, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. Hello, everybody, and welcome to What We're Into. This is the show where Rox and I talk about the things that we can't fit into the main show, but this is a special one because this one is actually going out to the people at home. This is going to go public. This is the show where Rox and I talk about stuff like Last of Us. We're going to talk about Ted Lasso. This week, we're talking about John Wick Chapter 4. So if you want to check out this show, our continuing coverage of things like The Flash, you're going to want to do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. But let's dive right into it, starting with the season finale of The Last of Us. Look for the light. A pregnant Anna places her trust in a lifelong friend. Later, Joel and Ellie near the end of their journey. Roxy, what were your thoughts on the season finale of Last of Us? I'm very excited because you have not played the games, correct?
No, I haven't. I thought that this was excellent. I was so excited about it. I saw your tweets. Those made me really sad. I don't feel the same way you do, DJ.
Wait, what did I tweet? What did I say?
How evil Joel is.
Oh, yeah, Joel fucking sucks. Joel's the fucking worst.
That's what you tweeted.
Yeah.
So I love
it. I thought you were saying I tweeted that I didn't like it. I'm like, no, that would have never tweeted that.
No, you said he sucked and he's the worst, yeah. And I am Joel, and I think many of us are Joel.
Yeah, but that would be wrong.
It's wrong, but it's human, and I don't think it makes you suck or the worst. I think it makes, like, it's a horrible thing to do.
Yeah.
It's awful. It's so relatable and understandable. It's the same age-old adage, you know, of the train is coming, would you save the one person you love or 100 strangers? And it's not 100 strangers, it's a billion people. But
yeah, here's the thing, and I do think this is one of the moments where I think the show could have benefited from it, like it's done in previous episodes, kind of expound. This is basically almost beat for beat what happens in the game, except that, and I do think this makes things kind of tricky, Ellie's unconscious when they're found by the Fireflies, and she never wakes up until Joel saves her. So for people that haven't watched the episode, do that. Don't listen to us talk about it. Go watch the episode. It's fucking good. But basically, Joel and Ellie finally get to their destination. And Ellie is immune to cordyceps, and they're going to try and create a vaccine out of it. But because cordyceps grows in the brain, it's going to kill her. As we've been seeding throughout the entire series, Joel, not a good dude. And that part of Joel comes out, and he murders a whole hell of a lot of people to save Ellie. But I think more importantly is that he makes the choice for her. So I've had a lot of people like you.
Yeah, Rusty, that's definitely the problem.
Is that people are like, well, no, he loved Ellie. It's like, well, no, he didn't do this for Ellie. And I think the show does a good job making that clear. He doesn't do this for Ellie. He does it for himself.
There was no conversation prior. He was knocked out. And then when he wakes up, she's under.
Yes.
He did not have the opportunity prior to have a conversation and have her make the choice. The choice has already been made for her by Marlene.
Yes. And that is also a mistake on her part.
Let me finish. So at that point, he has the choice either to wake her up and get her choice or let her die.
Yes.
Those are the two options.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you wake her up to get her choice without murdering people.
Yeah.
Feels like that's not an option. So he kills everybody to wake her up, which almost eliminates her choice because the people who are going to do it are all dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's not until she looks at him and says what happened and he lies that really I felt like Ooh, that was the wrong thing to do. Now she doesn't know.
Because here's the thing. He knows what her choice would be. She very specifically said to him, this needs to be worth something. I'm basically willing to do whatever it takes. He knows. So if he tells her the truth, and he knows this, if he tells her the truth, she's going to hate him for it. Because
but
she should.
Afterwards. However, you feel like beforehand she had expressed clearly enough, let me die?
Clearly enough. Like, listen, she should have been given... this is a moment where I think they could have expounded more, because in the game, it functions basically in the game, but it's a very icky feeling in the game. Like, you've been working so... You've been playing out even more hours than there are of the show to get to this point, and then you're blowing it all up because of Joel. It's a very... And I think the act of playing it conveys that better than maybe just showing it. And I think the show could have done more to expound of reminding, like, technically the Fireflies are the good guy, like having moments like maybe Joel seeing these people on his way down, whatever. I'm not gonna rewrite the fucking show. Yes, I think she expresses, we know what choice she would have made, and something that I think the show has done an excellent job of doing for me, what I get out of this show is that is a meditation on letting go. We've seen throughout the show on the town Jackson, on Bill and Frank, on that indigenous couple whose name I can't remember, people who are able to let go of the world that was actually kind of do okay in this world. It's the people that try, it's Fedra, it's the Fireflies, it's these people that try and scrape back whatever they can. And we see that, and I think that is ultimately exemplified in Joel. Because Joel's not even doing this for, he's not doing this for Ellie. He's doing it for his dead daughter. he's doing it for himself. If he was able to let go of his daughter being gone and what the situation that he finds himself in with Ellie, because he's not even saving Ellie's life. I'm not going to spoil the sequel, but all he's doing is not just protracting this cycle of violence for the entire planet, but very specifically for himself and Ellie. This decision ruins their lives. I think that's what we've seen through the show. If you're unable to let go and accept loss, all you're doing is prolonging suffering for yourself and everyone around you. And I think that's the ultimate example here. And I think in the game, Joel, because it's not Pedro Pascal, Joel's a much more terse character. But I think what they find here is also interesting, because I found it almost pathetic when in this show, when he's walking with Ellie and he's like, yeah, I think you and my daughter would have been friends. It's like, fuck no, Joel. You just said yourself how different they are. I don't know if you know how teenagers work, but usually if you're that different, you're not going to be like BFFs, man. Like, that's just not, it's, you're delusional because you're trying to justify your decisions, and you were wrong. You were wrong. It was the wrong call. So
what do you think he should have done? You wake up and you find out that Ellie is about to die and was knocked out.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I think you push to have, for one, I do think that it's this way in the game and it's this way in the show too. I think the nature of having, it's trickier and whatever, doesn't matter. We don't have time for me to get on the list. Anyway, I think you try and push for a conversation about making her choose. I get why Marlene doesn't, because it's like, what choice is there? If she says no, we're still going to do it because we got to save fucking humanity. I think you have to accept the loss. You have to accept the loss and the acceptance of humanity. Truthfully, I think the other thing is, if I'm Marlene, I'm not letting fucking Joel go. I'm fucking killing him.
No, of course. She even
specifically says, our last reminder of how much of an asshole Joel used to be. She says to him, you're the last person I wanted to be in debt to.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, you fucking killed Joel. Sorry, everybody.
There's no conversation to be had because Marlene is the one who took that away. You know, like, they're already, so I do feel for Joel that he is already on borrowed time.
Yeah.
She's already KO'd, you know, like, we didn't even give him the chance to do the right thing at first.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong, I actually think this is incredibly compelling storytelling. This, for me, I think most of the narrative of the game is not that interesting until this moment. And I think Joel's decision is very human, and that's what makes it so tragic and so dark. I just also think it's wrong. And I think it's selfish. And I think, unfortunately, I think the show and the story and the game definitely understands this is wrong and selfish. And that's what makes it so interesting. So this isn't me showing, I'm saying bad shows. Like, no, good show, good job. It's just Joel sucks.
DJ, when did The Last of Us second video game come out?
When did it come out?
Yes.
I want to say either 2022 or 2021. Somebody in the chat can let me know. A couple years ago.
If you don't want anything spoiled for you about the video game at all, then tune out for 1 second.
Yes.
Because this is something that I just... you and I have been doing the show together for a long time.
Yes.
Here's what I know.
Okay.
Prior to The Last of Us having a TV show.
Yes.
We were talking about what we're into.
Uh-huh.
And you said to me, I'm really into this video game, The Last of Us.
Yeah.
But, you know, people are being sexist as fuck about it because in the first video game, it's a first person shooter game where you're Joel.
It's a third person shooter. But you're playing Joel. Yeah.
But you're playing Joel.
Yeah.
In the second video game, you're playing Ellie, and people are being really sexist about that because there's also this other girl that you play who's like a very big girl and people are just being sexist.
Yeah.
You said that to me years ago.
Yes.
Prior to this being a show.
Yes.
So my assumption this entire time.
Did I ruin the show for you?
No, I have no idea. My assumption this entire time is that Joel was going to die in this finale.
Okay.
Because you told me you go from playing Joel to playing Ellie. So I felt a completely different wave of relief in this finale of I knew for a fact Joel was going to die.
Yeah.
And so, like, when he doesn't die in the previous week, I'm like, oh, my God, they're really dragging this out. Like, what, did he get some kind of, like, poisoning or whatever? And then he lives and saves her. And I'm like, okay. But now I'm like, so do they kill him in the off season? Like, how are we going to get to – and I don't know. Maybe in the second video game – and don't tell me.
I won't.
But maybe in the second video game, Joel is alive. You're just not playing as him.
It's very much a possibility.
Or maybe he's dead and we don't ever show it, discuss, or there's flashbacks or whatever. But when we pick up in season two, Joel's gone and dusted. And I'm like, that's a weird fucking choice. So it was bizarre, DJ, because I have no knowledge of this game other than remembering this is what you were into years ago. Mm-hmm. And you told me how sexist people were being.
Yes.
So I literally prepared myself this entire time for Joel to die in the finale.
Yeah.
And I kept saying to people, yeah, I know what happens in the finale.
Mm-hmm.
And then when this happened, I was like, oh, is that different than the video game? And then I looked it up and it wasn't. And I was like, maybe I misremembered what DJ said.
No, you didn't. I'm not going to say anything. What was I going to Pedro Pascal should be back unless they decide to do something different. He should be back for season two.
Okay.
The end. That's all I'm going to say.
This whole time I thought we were going to fucking Ned Stark him.
No, yeah, and I will say I think the narrative storyline wise, part two is better than part one by and large. It continues the complexities from this finale and the moral ambiguity, and it gets murkier from there. And I think it does a really good exploration of the fallout from violence. I will say there is a very specific reason. I don't know if you noticed it, Roxy, but we spent a long, long time on a shot of the dead doctor. That is because it is important. That doctor that he killed, that's important for part two. So the end on that, I don't want to spoil. And God, fuck, I hope that the season two, we don't have to wait like 2 to 3 years for it, because I don't want to sit on what happens in the second game for too long. It was so hard, Roxy. Like when in episode three, when Bill leaves that message for Joel of like, yeah, man, find your person and fuck everybody else. I really want to talk about like, that's actually a really bad message for Joel. Don't give Joel that message. It should be, no, save as many people as you can, Joel. Don't just choose one person and fuck everybody else. Don't tell him. Don't say that. I wanted to, they seeds throughout the show that kind of set up like all the times we mentioned, like how bad Joel used to be. It's like, oh, well, we're going to see bad Joel at the end. Like, I want to talk about it. I don't have to wait that long for part two. So also the actress that is Ellie's mom in the opening sequence, the pregnant lady, is Ashley Johnson, who plays Ellie in the game. And it is a testament. It's a reminder of how good the casting is, because seeing Ashley Johnson,
holy
this,
shit, they looked identical.
They look alike, and their mannerisms are, and it's like, yeah, because That's right, because Bella Ramsey's playing the same character from the game, but she's doing such a good job that it's like, yeah, it's the same character. Like, you feel it. Like, of course this is her mom, because they're the same. It's cool.
Yeah, really cool that in this season, Troy Baker had a role, and Ashley Johnson had a role, you know, like that this OG cast. That is very, very cool. And must be such a wild full circle moment for Ashley to be playing her own mother.
Like, yes. Yeah, great moment. Also, Laura Bailey, who plays an important character in part two, played a nurse. The thing, which also matters if you know part two. Not going to say any more about that. Let's real quickly.
Because he did keep the nurses alive.
He did. Yes. Yes. Yes, he did. Yes.
Which is interesting. When he kills Marlene.
And she points out to him when he's like, you didn't give her choice. And she's like, bitch, you didn't give her a choice either, man. fucking cool. We can figure this out, man.
Yeah, but also, when she says we can figure this out, we know that at that point she's going to dust him if he says.
The also important, because I think this is a part where I'm glad they expounded upon it. Because in the game she mentions that she has more of a history with Ellie than even Joel does. And so I'm glad they included the flashback, because it helps cement that, like, yeah, no, when she says I understand, she's not talking out of her ass. She understands, you know? Mandalorian, season 3, episode 3, The Convert.
You didn't like this one.
What did you think, Roxy?
I actually don't love that it was like full-blown not an episode of Mandalorian for most of it.
Yeah.
Because I was a little interested, but then I'm more interested. I'm very interested in the storyline of Katee Sackhoff and the Mandalorian, and when you wear your helmet, when you don't, and them saying you can leave anytime. Mm-hmm. I'm intrigued by that, and the merging of these Mandalorian, I'm going to call them tribes. That's not the right word, though.
It works. But, yeah, like, I get it.
The Mandalorian groups.
Clans, whatever. I don't, clan, do they have yeah, any? Whatever.
I don't know. Whatever they are. And like, can you become one with people who have different ideas of how to practice your isms?
Yeah.
And I'm really intrigued by all of that, and what Katee Sackhoff's character is going to, Bo-Katan's going to do.
Yeah.
And I like all that. We spent like more than half the episode.
Yeah, the bulk of the episode with scientist guy and soldier lady.
And I was like, I think that big Star Wars fans like this and care about this. I, as a casual fan who loves Star Wars, but is not, was kind of just like, huh? Like, I always know that the story is not that compelling to me when I'm like, this acting is very good. Like, I was thinking about like the other elements of the show.
You're like, that practical alien dude on the subway crane looks cool.
Yeah. So this was definitely not my favorite episode. I didn't dislike it by any means, but you know, like, you feel your mind wandering. You're like, go to check your text messages and your email, because you're just like, no, this does not captivate me right now.
Here's something I hope you can help me with. I thought it was fine, because I thought what we were doing was, hey, here's how the First Order came about. Here's why the Empire didn't go away, because these people. I do have a question. How? This isn't even the question I want to ask you, but like, they make a point like, yeah, the former Imperialists are reincorporated in society. It's like, wait, the Empire was the whole galaxy. Isn't everybody a former Imperialist? Whatever. It doesn't matter. So I thought we were doing, hey, secret origin of the First Order, until, spoilers for The Mandalorian, she betrays him. And I don't know what the show's trying to, I don't know why she did that. And I don't know what the show's trying to convey to me.
Do you think that we're going to pick up with them next week?
I would like to say yes, but the first episode made a big deal about Mandalorian trying to resurrect IG-11 and then just seemingly dropped it.
Because I don't have an answer for you yet.
Do you think we're going to, is this like, hey, stay tuned? Or is it like, that's the entire story we wanted to tell?
I kind of feel like that's the entire story we wanted to tell, which I think is very confusing if that is what they choose, because it's like, I'm with you where I was just like, what am I supposed to get out of that? I don't think I got what I was supposed to get. And maybe the biggest Star Wars nerds did get it.
Yeah.
But I was kind of like, wait, so she did that, and what are the implications of that? Like,
yeah.
What?
Because the only thing I can, if this is a to be continued, the only thing I can think of, because we talk about how Moff Gideon is still around, the bad guy from the previous seasons. And so maybe he wanted this guy's equipment. And so she used him to get it, but then wouldn't you want the guy who knows how to use the equipment? Like, wouldn't, why would you, I presume she mind wiped him. I don't know what happens when you crank a mind flare up to the top, whatever, but I assume it's not good things. I'm assuming it doesn't improve his disposition. So I don't know. And couldn't you have just gotten, if you knew where it was, couldn't you just have cleaned out that lab, just got everything if you didn't need him? I don't know. I don't know is it just we're trying to say, hey, she's evil still. Okay. I don't know what that means to me if we're not going to pick up with her again later. I like that actress. She was in Ant-Man 3. I like that actress.
And I liked him too. They were both very good.
Yes. Did you, whenever the glasses scientist was on, did you ever think Hector Navarro?
Yeah, they do. They have a similar vibe sometimes. Yeah.
Okay. I was just wondering if it's just me. All right. This one we don't need to spend a lot of time on. Let's go to The Flash, season 9, episode 6, The Good, the Bad, and the Lucky. Roxy, you texted me about this before I watched it. And God bless you.
I couldn't help it. I was like, I need to let DJ know what's ahead right now. This is what I texted you. Tell me again why I don't use my powers to take these scumbags to Dreamtown.
And then I texted you later in the episode and I refused to rewind to see if this is what happened. It sounded like a character said, it's everything but the roast chicken. And I'm like, in this episode, let's see what the summary says. Barry and Iris prepare for a new life. Cecile takes on a case involving a string of unfortunate and highly unexpected events. Chester and the team work on Keown. God damn it, Keown. We find out fucking Keown's not, is Keown a fucking alien? What the fuck is going on with Keown? Anyway.
She's not a metahuman, but she's not a human.
Okay. What does that mean? And why?
You know what I thought?
She was a person with ice powers before. Why is she psychic now?
And she made it snow.
Yeah. And but the point is, for those that don't remember, I had to look it up. Luck changing powers person from season 4.
Okay. I was like, what did I text you say?
Yeah.
Cecile Allegra and this girl who I think I'm supposed to remember, but don't.
Yeah. She's from season 4. And as they mentioned in the episode, she was killed in season 4. So not only do we have to reintroduce this character, we have to explain how the crisis event brought her back to life, which they imply she's like, I guess she just got lucky, which kind of implies that her powers exist beyond the grave. Anyway, I don't.
And why? Why did we need to bring her back?
So here's my, and this continue, you include this in the text. This continues our continuing thread of what does Cecile have on the showrunners of The Flash that this is her show now? And
this is now her show. She's holding the show hostage.
Yes. And what I want to know is you're doing the last season of your show. And you're like, yeah, man, we have time for like one following our C-listers. Let's just have these. And here's the only explanation I can find for this is that, okay, maybe, listen, Stephen Amell is not cheap, maybe. And you've got cameos for the finale. So we got to save money, but we have an episode order. Why is this the choice you make? Why is this? Also, how did the casino work at the end? They're just in an upper room, but the buffet looked like trash, by the way. And
the casino thing was the dumb, like, so she's just in this upper room and the guy comes over and says, everything all right over here?
Yeah.
And
then there's not security at this casino. And also, were the people kidnapping her the casino? What's happening?
Were the people kidnapping her in the casino? Why is she just able to be the person giving cards?
Like, yeah. Don't you, isn't that a job that you vet?
And then when they see that what the fuck's her name, Allegra and Cecile are downstairs and they're like, what are they doing here? Like, isn't it a casino? And it looked like a lunch break room at a retirement home. This was the episode that I found the most egregious so far.
Agreed.
Because what this show is not is The Flash.
Yes. Yes.
We are now watching a show that is no longer called The Flash. The Flash is not in this episode. Mm-mm. Like, the fact that what did that when you just said the description of the episode, it said Iris and The Flash.
Barry and Iris prepare for a new life, which means they're not in the episode.
Bullshit. They're preparing for a new life off screen.
Yeah.
until the very end. Like, this is not a Flash show. It's not an Irish show. It's not even a Joe show.
Yeah.
It's certainly not a Cisco show. It's not a Caitlin show. This is a Cecile, yeah, Allegra, Chester, and Keanu. What's her name?
Keon. Yeah. I can't just remember what I read about the showrunner where he's like, sorry guys, we wanted to do like a Legends, like do like a send off to the Legends, but we didn't have time in these episodes to do it. And I'm like, for this? For this was what you chose over. How about, listen, Barry and Iris aren't going to be in this episode. Let's bring out back Katie Lotz for an episode. Let's blow our money on a cameo for the episode that Barry and Iris don't want. They want to film less episodes. So let's save them.
Make it in one room. Have no CGI.
Yeah.
I don't think, like, if you have, say your episode budget here is, say it's $150,000.
Yes.
I literally want you to write a check to Melissa Benoist or Katie Lotz. Yes. Or
both if you can.
Or both of you for $149,000.
Mm-hmm.
And stick them in a black box. Or a white box, whatever.
Yeah, you have the collider set. They're stuck there for
the
reasons.
The entire episode is that they are there alone trying to get out. I don't care.
Yes.
Like, I don't need you to spend money on Grodd, which you clearly didn't because he looked like shit. Mm-hmm. I don't need whatever this casino thing is. You don't need to get somebody back who died in episode 4. Like, I don't need any of it. Stick them in Star Labs and don't move them. Bottle episode them. Yeah. Do whatever you have to do so that the star of the show is not Cecile. She's a very good actress. This has nothing to do with her.
Yeah.
The show is called The Flash.
Yeah, it's called The Flash. Also, or maybe, listen, if you're dedicated to making the Cecile thing work, have her save the Legends. Have her be the one that saves the Legends. I'll allow it.
What is Cecile's power?
Mind stuff.
So why can she make this bottle of alcohol move and like?
Because now that's apparently what we learned in a previous season is now she's psychokinetic. Also, here's what confused me. Apparently what happened in the previous episode that I missed is that Joe is now living away from, that was the decision that was made, is that Joe and their daughter are living someplace else now, but Cecile is staying. I was like, oh, was that what we decided? That's a weird choice. Again, nothing against this actress, but we could have Cecile just go with them. I don't know anybody's watching this show for Cecile.
Question for you.
Yes.
Are they going to make Danielle Panabaker some kind of a religious thing?
I'm going to guess Alien. It's either Alien. I'm going to guess Alien. I don't know why or
if
how or
Alien,
what that means.
I think some kind of an angel thing, which is why she knows the pregnancy, and
that'd be fucking weird for this show. That would be fucking wild. But at this point, I wouldn't put it past them. It's like every wrong decision. It's like, you were gonna have, why are you even doing this to Daniel? Just have her be Frost, man. Just have her be Caitlin Snow or Frost and save yourself some time and energy. Why the fuck are we doing this?
Can I say something mean?
Yes.
I have something mean to say. DJ, truly and genuinely, this is so mean, and I never say this. I hate this show.
It's not good.
It's wildly bad.
Yeah.
This, like, where is Iris?
Mm-hmm. She's pregnant. See, they're going off. They're having a honeymoon for a week.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Your two leads didn't even want to be in one of the final episodes of the show. So cool. So listen, for time purposes, let's roll on to something we did like. Let's go over to Ted Lasso, season 3, episode 1, Smells Like Mean Spirit. The newly promoted AFC Richmond face mockery as pundits predict they'll finish dead last.
Yeah, I'm excited to have a feel-good show back.
Yes.
I didn't think that this episode was as strong as some of the other episodes or premieres. But still good. I love the stuff with the sewer. And like, let it flow through you like shit, you know. My biggest, you know, DJ as our resident lover of love, shipper of ships.
Yes.
My biggest issue right now, and I get it, all shows have to throw this wrench in the wrench in the plan, and I do understand, but Keely and Roy are like the heart for me, and I love them together. And I don't want to go through an entire season three of them not together.
Especially since the last one. It's the last season.
I just don't want... Is that true?
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you think...
I just don't want it.
Do you think it is really because of work, or do you think there's something else that they're not being honest about?
Like, well, we saw last season they were fighting about different things, and, you know, like... Yeah. I think it's all that, but... I think that they need to be together and they're going to get back together. And it's just like, I don't really want to spend the whole season of them apart when some of the most beautiful moments of the show are them together. You know, and I love like that moment last season where they're talking to Rebecca mm-hmm. and, you know, they meet that guy of hers and they're like, he's fine, but you deserve like, it should be like fireworks. And Roy and Keely are. And when his niece is like, you're making a mistake. And it's like, yeah, we all know you're making a mistake. This is so annoying.
Yeah. I also, it was fucking brutal when she's like, oh, you know, it's okay. It's a, you know, people can't, a lot of relationships can't last one work change, let alone two. And yeah. Listen, my parents divorced a long time ago. So I learned at a young age, things don't last forever.
I know.
Wrong lesson. Yeah. That's not the takeaway from this little girl. But I like yeah, I like the roller
coaster.
Yeah, I like the roller coaster there where it's where it felt like, oh no, this kid gets it, and then she like takes it to the lesson she got out of me, like, oh no. Also, wait, is Nate the one that was the assistant and is now the villain? I know people didn't like
Nate the Great.
Nate the Great. I know that people didn't really like that last season. However, I think this is a really smart way. I mean, because this is how insecurity manifests itself in some people. Like a lot of the most vicious people are just deeply, deeply insecure. And so I actually think it's really smart. I think they're handling it in a way that makes it like, yeah, he's a bad dude, but also like you get the pain that this is coming from. And there's the hope that like, he'll learn that like, damn, this dude's fucking using you, dude. He's just trying to get back at his fucking wife and shit.
Totally. To me, though, this was you just talked about a lesson that you thought was bad for the girl to take.
Yeah.
I didn't love the take that Ted Lasso had on this one, which is like, if he just shits on himself, then everything's okay. Like nobody can shit on him harder than himself. Like the whole, you want to know how stupid I am?
Yeah.
Like, I just don't know about that as the message. Like when you're getting buried, you know, you don't fight back because he doesn't want to. You like, I think there's such things to be said about taking the high road, but then he like destroyed himself.
Yeah, I think the lesson more is I was also unsure about that, but I think the lesson is more letting people be themselves, and that is how Ted feels best to respond to it. And so while it might not be how you and I would respond to it, even if we're trying to respond to it gracefully.
But I don't know if that's the healthiest way to respond is by ripping yourself down, you know, like.
Yeah, no, I see what you mean. I see what you mean. I think the argument would be that he's not tearing himself down so much as he's just being good natured about it. But I do
see
what
you mean.
He's
literally saying, you want to know how stupid I am. You want to know how stupid I am. You know, like
I did like the, I've had more psychotic episodes than Twin Peaks. That was a good one.
All good lines and all good moments. And it works in this episode, but I am just sitting there thinking like this, like, guy is such an inspiration, and I think a lot of people try to live their lives like Ted Lasso, and I just don't know about that.
Yeah. So before we go, let's do the big one. Roxanne and I had an opportunity to see John Wick chapter 4, directed once again by Chad Stahelski, written by Shay Hatton and Michael Finch. John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. But before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces that turn old friends into foes. Let me pull up Rotten Tomatoes because it might have changed since I last had it open.
When I saw it, I had like a 90 or something.
Same. Let me see. And spoiler-free thoughts. I will say this. I didn't love John Wick Chapter 3, the last one. I thought like, okay, so, you know, there's limits to this. Right now it's 93% on Rotten Tomatoes.
And that's funny because people who don't love John Wick 3, I would think wouldn't love this one.
I loved it. I
loved this too, but I loved 3.
I liked 3. I rewatched them all before this. Before this movie, I thought the high watermark was 2. 2 was where it all like clicked into place. this might beat it. And I was worried going in because it's a long ass runtime. I think we have a question about it. Jake Hefner asks, at almost 3 hours long, do you think John Wick 4's runtime helped it or hurt it? I think it worked, honestly, and especially. Nope, I'm going to save that for spoilers. I think it worked. I think it worked, and I think everybody was at peak. I also think they really went all out for this one. Not only, we also have another question. Len Kim, aside from Keanu Reeves, who else stands out in John Wick 4? Fucking Donnie Yen, motherfuckers! But not just Donnie Yen. We got fucking Hiroyuki Sanada Rina Sawayama, who I didn't know was a fucking pop, the daughter of the one guy. I didn't know she's a fucking pop star. I didn't know
that either.
Based on this, I'm like, it's probably a stunt lady because she's doing so good here. No, she's a fucking pop star. Well, goddamn. Maybe this is a spoiler. There's a couple few other like action movie icons that appear deeper in the movie that I was like, oh fuck. So I won't get into spoilers, but the long story short, I fucking love this movie. I think this franchise is fucking great. I think this is a great example of this franchise. It really feels like a bunch of stunt guys getting together. Like, what's the hardest fucking shit we can possibly do? I think one of the best action scenes in any of these movies prior to this, there's a stairway fight between Keanu Reeves and Common in 2. There's an action scene in this movie that's like that time. It's like they took that scene and made a movie out of it.
Totally. It was so sick. I think the runtime was too long. I love this movie.
Yeah.
And I would have sat there forever. But I felt my audience getting a little antsy. And okay. I think that this could have definitely had a 220, 230 runtime. I love extended action sequences because I'm just sitting there thinking like, holy shit. It's kind of for me like watching a musical.
Yeah.
Like I love dance numbers.
Yeah.
And watching specifically the scene that you're just talking about, the expanded one, you're sitting there thinking like, how you guys were able to shoot this is beyond me.
It's insane.
Yeah. So that could have lasted 3 hours itself. And mm-hmm. I thought it was funny. I thought it was unbelievably well choreographed and done. I thought it was action packed. I thought it was interesting and unique. Like I didn't have a problem with the runtime. Like as in, I felt like it was dragging, but I can feel the energy losing steam in the room, and I feel like you could have told just as good of a action story with 15, 20 minutes less, because sure. It really was close to 3 hours.
Yeah. And this was one of the few times where I didn't feel it as much because I was so wrapped up into it, but I totally hear what you're saying and how it could. And yeah, there's definitely, there's levels to especially to a lot of the action scenes where you could have like maybe cut off a level. Saved yourself some time. I wouldn't have done that, but I could see how it would have benefited with some audiences. Any other non-spoiler thoughts?
I think that this is just one of the best action franchises, or just franchises in general. I've never disliked a John Wick movie. I love them all.
Yeah.
And it's incredible that Keanu Reeves says about 5 words in this entire movie.
Yes.
Like, And I'm just, you just root for him so hard.
Yeah, he's such a great, I think he was a great choice for this lead because I tried to think about what differentiates John Wick from all the imitators that have come out since. And I think part of it is he brings such earnestness to it that no matter how heightened the reality gets, they don't treat it like a joke. And I think that's a lot of because of him. And I also think he's one of, hands down, probably the best action lead working today.
Really,
and
is.
I think a lot of that is his earn. Like, it'd be very easy for this for John Wick to come off as like kind of like a fucking asshole, but mm-hmm. Keanu Reeves, his performance is so, it's weird to say, but almost so loving. That when he said like when he talks about his wife, you're like, I fucking believe it. I believe. And also, you know, I'm going to relate with a guy that just wants to be left the fuck alone. Like, I my goal is to leave you for all you leave me the fuck alone.
This is why the age debate is so funny about how old should Batman be? How old should James Bond be? How, you know, Keanu Reeves is 58 fucking years old.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and he is out there like a 30-year-old. at the oldest.
And like, not just him. Donnie Yen, I think, is older than he is. And he puts everybody
in his 60s.
He puts everybody to shame. The only problem with Donnie Yen being in this movie is it's hard for me to believe that anybody could even last a minute in a fight with him. It's like you see him moving like, well, this guy's clearly going to murder everyone.
And they made such interesting choices with him that made it seem even more like a musical to me, like more mm-hmm. like a dance. And so good. I feel like Keanu and Nick Cage both have that thing that you're talking about. The two of them have that, like, the earnestness and the stillness of it. And it's so funny that growing up, people used to say Keanu was a bad actor. You know, that we always heard that. I never thought that, never felt that way. And still to this day, I feel like he fucking understands the assignment every time.
100%. I think he's like a lot of movie stars in that there's a few things that he excels at, but he genuinely excels at those fucking things. Like, and there's like the choice, having rewatched all the movies, like he's making a very distinct choice that when John Wick talks, it's almost like he's in fucking, like the fighting to him, easy. Communicating, like just talking, is like a fucking chore.
Totally.
It's great. And I think it really works. And I think like a lot of movie star leads, I think he sets the tone for the rest of the movie in a very productive way. I think the tone he sets for this movie is all, and is probably why it invites so many greats. Like there's so many greats in this fucking movie. It's great. I love it. I think this is a good movie. We're going to wrap up what we're into, but we're going to do spoilers, but we're talking about this early. If you wanted to listen to this early, you should go over to patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. I want to thank everybody that joined us. Leonard Kim is watching Shrinking, Daisy Jones, Superman and Lois, Gotham Knights. Ooh boy, Leonard, how is Gotham Knights? Mike Joyce is watching The Mandalorian, Shrinking as well. I need to fucking watch Shrinking. He watched Champions. Kayla Marie was asking us how was Arrow's final season. And I actually thought it was pretty good. Definitely better than The Flash's final season. All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned for John Wick Chapter 4 spoilers. Thank you for sticking with us, everybody. We're back for spoilers. And I was thinking, I was going to have us do this completely non-spoiler, except for one very specific thing. Other than I would love to gush over, I could talk to you for hours about all the fight scenes I loved and how they worked. And fucking, what's the, Roxy, do you know off the top of your head the name of that Circle Street in France?
No.
That street, but that roundabout, there's a whole fight in a roundabout that fucking like.
That was unbelievable. But being the stair sequence was the sequence that I was like.
Because anybody that's run up a flight of stairs knows especially if you're not in super shape, it can be kind of challenging. So imagine filming an action sequence on one of the tallest staircases in the world over what had to have been days, 2 weeks. It's like, oh my fucking God.
The way that is so impressive. And then down the stairs, up the stairs.
Yeah. And if you've fallen downstairs, you know, that can fuck you up bad. Stairs can really fuck you up. And so it's like, oh my God.
Yeah. But in also the circle, what you're talking about, that roundabout, I mean, everything in here, that the roundabout was like, this is Fast and the Furious with Gun Fu. And
yes.
I'm so here for this. Holy shit. How are you guys doing this?
Yeah. Obviously some of it is CG, but some of it's not. And it's like, no. What is happening?
Totally. And then my favorite spoiler thing to talk about, though, other than the fighting stuff, is that the dog stuff in this worked so beautifully that it was like, if you're a John Wick fan and you love the first John Wick movie, you know it's been made fun of so many times for being like, it's a guy who goes on a murdering bender because they kill his dog.
Yes.
And when you boil it down, that is what happened.
100%.
The fact that he, in that moment, when he doesn't shoot the guy and he shoots the guy who's about to shoot the dog, and you're like, the full circleness of this, and then like the respect that he gains.
Yeah.
It just was such a beautiful moment that I was like, I was not expecting to actually have the feels. Like, I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. Like, so good.
And shout out to Shamir Anderson, who plays the character's labeled Tracker. This was another one where I was like, oh, I've never seen this guy before. He must be a stunt guy. And it's like, no, he's just an actor, but he was so excellent in the action scenes. Fuck, like it's so great. I also wanted to shout out Scott Adkins. So anybody that's watched any directed DVD action movies know who Scott Adkins is. He's a fucking action legend. He plays a character called Killa that you might I was watching, he's in like a fat suit or whatever. I was like, wait, is that Scott Adkins? And then I saw him move in a fight and I'm like, that's Scott Adkins.
And we haven't mentioned Bill Skarsgård, who I think did a fucking awesome job.
He was good. I was unsure. I don't talk to a lot of French people. I don't know how good his accent was.
Yeah, who knows about that? But oh my God, I thought he was so good. The Chad Stahelski, mm-hmm. This is all he's ever directed?
So far, yeah, these four movies.
What are you doing next? Okay, the spoiler thing that we have to talk about, though, obviously being... Are you about to say the end of the movie?
Hold on, because there's a question that leads into it. Jake Hefner asks, did John Wick 4 get you excited for a fifth entry? And on IMDb, there's a John Wick 5, and I'm like, how?
Okay, here are my two thoughts on it. My two thoughts on it are we don't see him dead, so I don't know if he's dead.
I honestly thought there was going to be because they lead right up to the classic fake out where they're basically pretending that he's dead and he's now living his life happily, which would have been great for me.
And I think maybe they are doing that, and maybe in the great, who the fuck, who knows?
Yeah.
But also, the storyline that's unfinished in this is the storyline with the daughter, where she's like, if you don't kill him, I will.
Yes.
And we know they both have daughters. We know that the daughter that's left alive and Donnie Yen's daughter exists too.
Yes.
So there could be a whole John Wick moving forward, revenge of the daughters, Donnie Yen situation.
Did you see the post-credit scene?
No.
So there's a post-credit scene where Donnie Yen's going to go see his daughter.
There's a post-credit scene.
And then
why does everybody do that?
And then the other daughter, the one that wants revenge, is there, and she pulls out a knife, and then we don't see what happens.
Oh, no way. So I predicted it.
Yeah. And so the question is, like, for one, if you told me you're going to do a whole spinoff franchise off of Donnie Yen's character, I'm fucking there for it. I don't want him to
know more about the eyes, though.
Because the implication is that, because we see the tracker gets his hand cut, the implication is that Donnie Yen did that to himself. I think it was just an excuse to be like, we have to provide some reason why Donnie Yen just doesn't wipe the floor with everybody. I guess he's blind.
But I really liked when they say they took your eyes, and he said, I gave them to them.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, what does that mean?
Yeah. And his physical, before you talked about it, but his physical performance in this, not just the action, obviously the action, but like just the way he moves in it. Every scene he steals, and it's seemingly impossible to do considering the cast in this movie. He like steals every scene. He's like, oh yes, this is my movie now.
I know. He's so good. And I just watched Ip Man for the first time, and I'm so obsessed with him. Like, it's crazy.
You got a little tease of Ip Man in this, where he does one of his like rapid fire punch, like just demolishes a person with a rapid fire punch. You're like, God, oh my God, he'd fucking kill me.
Yeah. So I do think though that there is room for John Wick to still be alive, because this franchise is so over the top, and I wouldn't be mad at that.
Yeah.
Or I think that there's so many spinoffs that they're working on right now. I mean, it's a whole franchise.
Yeah, we've got the Ballerina with Ana de Armas. We've got the Continental Show, unfortunately, with Mel Gibson.
Brutal.
Yeah. Is there any chance in your mind that John Wick 5, that announcement is just kind of a fake out?
I don't think so. I think there's going to be a John Wick 5. This movie, I think, is going to make all the money.
Yeah,
but
the part of me that makes me feel like maybe it's not, because it really does feel like so many action icons are in this. It really does feel like they knew it was the end. Like this is it. This is our swan song.
Maybe.
And what a good note to end on, in my opinion.
It would be. If it ends here, I'd be stoked.
Yeah.
But I also would be stoked for there to be a fifth one. I will follow this franchise into the ground.
Same. And real quick, I did also want to mention, you talked about Keanu Reeves acting. There's a fucking moment, and I think this is why I talk about the sincerity. There's a moment when he's on the boat with Lawrence Fishburne and Ian McShane, both great in this movie, and they're talking about. I didn't like that they killed Lance Reddick. That fucking bummed me out. But anyway,
that bummed me out too. I love him.
Real quick, editor's note here: we recorded this literally right before the news broke that Lance Reddick had passed. If you're wondering why we didn't mention it. Mentioning it now, heartbroken. Lance Reddick is not only fantastic in all the John Wick movies, but The Wire and so many other amazing projects. I didn't want to have the episode go up without us at least mentioning it. Fantastic actor. Check out his work and just make sure you tell your loved ones how much you care about them. Okay, back to John Wick. He's fantastic. But anyway, they're talking about what you put on the grave, and he gets up and he's like, loving husband. And they're like, what? That's what I want on my grave. Fucking gutted me, fucking, and a John Wick movie of all movies fucking gutted me, because again, like, his performance is so consistent. All these, like, you know, that's fucking true. Like, he fucking means that shit. Oh,
totally.
Fucking good movie. Please go watch it. Prove Roxy right. Give it all the money. Makes these movies make me so fucking happy. Anyway, that's it from us. Roxy, where can people find you?
Everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
You can find me at DJ Talks Trash. You can follow the show everywhere that matters, not only Stupid Answers, but on Twitter.
Yank out the vowels from stupid.
Got it right that time. And again, if you want to check out our other reviews for Last of Us or The Mandalorian or Ted Lasso, you can do that over at patreon.com/onlystupidanswers. We'll see you all next time. Bye, everybody.